with most or many respondents identifying projects as high priority, climate-related risks, cryptos, intangibles, statement of cash flows, pollutant pricing mechanisms, and going concern. Feedback on the other projects was either mixed or indeed some of the projects were rated as a low priority. Feedback from users was broadly consistent with the messages that we heard on the other projects, with the exception of segments, which we heard about just before the break, where many users rated segments as a high priority, or certainly higher priority than a lot of the other respondents that we heard from. So with that, I'd like to open it up for discussion with the board members.
And go talk back. Now I can see it. Yeah.
Now it's one comment on the discount. First of all, as I said, it's quite helpful the degree of people supporting electing the priority for some of the projects. It's just one in the project on discount rate, inflation, negative interest rate. It's interesting that I start behaving like people when they say that we shouldn't have discount. And then because I come from an economy that has high inflation, high interest rate, I can understand that. And then when someone tell me that we should talk about negative interest rate, doesn't make sense. Okay. I really think that higher interest rates can cause more problems to the financial statements than negative interest rate. Not saying that it isn't a problem. Of course it is as well. But when we just look at these projects and try to understand the reasons for and the comments that are here, I'm just wondering one thing that we also, and I think that someone has already commented on this in the papers before, some of these projects, maybe they could be worked together. And just taking the discount rate, I think that the discount rate could incorporate the question on negative interest rate as well. And it could involve some of the problems that we also have with foreign currency is also affecting interest rate discounting and also inflation. Most of the discussion, for example, just taking as an example, IFRS 16, most of those discussing discount rate, they have an inflation background, and then it makes a big difference when we discuss discounting when you have an inflation background. That's why I think that discount sounds a project that can incorporate much of the discussion that we have in other projects as well. I'm just trying to it's not like one, but it's not two or three. It's not going to become a three size project. It will be more than one, but it will probably be worth taking all together. Thank you.
Thanks, Tadeo. Mary?
And maybe some of this is a hangover from the topics we discussed or some of the issues we discussed before the break. It struck me that one request to the staff when you're working through the individual projects and feedback, I mean, you've given us an overview, but I presume bringing some back, is can you separate those requests that are here are information needs, here are gaps, here are problems, from requests that are for specific outcomes? Because I think, frankly, I weighed a please mandate the direct method cash flows differently than I have identified the following information gaps about cash flow information and how cash flow articulates with other things. And I'm just using that as an example. So to the extent some of the support is I want you to do this, you know, to achieve this, I think that's narrower or I would maybe weight it differently than something that has a bit more information about what information is lacking. And the second kind of how you structure the feedback, And maybe not dissimilar to what Tadeo was saying about discount rates, but let me start with a different example, is intangibles. And might have been you, Andres, I can't remember. Somebody before the break said there are a lot of things that people seem to be trying to argue are part of an intangibles project. I think making a decision about whether or not we are going to put a high priority on a big intangibles recognition and measurement project could be a critical path for deciding whether we're going to do a targeted project on cryptos or pollutant pricing or something else. Because if we're going to look holistically at recognition and measurement of intangibles, I don't know I'd want to start at the same time a project that looks at recognition and measurement requirements for a subset of intangibles. If we decide that we're not going to do a recognition and measurement project on intangibles, then I might want to consider more actively doing recognition and measurement for a particular subset, you know, assess whether or not. So I think to the extent in the agenda consultation, you know, development of feedback, we can identify critical paths where we should talk about this issue first so that we know if we high priority, low priority for something. I think that could help us then with some of the more specific items. So think about when you can identify those. There also were some suggestions, I think not a lot, that we should review the priority and necessity of current projects. And I just encourage staff to bring that, the question of do we do that or do we not, relatively early and fast, because that has kind of a big impact on some of the other decisions we make. I'm not advocating that we do that. We went into the RFI saying we're not going to, but we did get some feedback. So to the extent you think that means that we need to reconsider that, let's do that early and get that out of the way.
Just on that, Mary, one of the papers that we have for next month deals with comments that we got on the current work plan, including comments about whether we should discontinue mm-hmm. particular projects.
So great. So that's in process. Then a couple of other comments about three or four other specific projects. On going concern, if you could separate the feedback into those who were asking us to do develop a basis of preparation when you're no longer a going concern versus those who want information about how you do the assessment and what disclosure should be made, because those are actually, well, they're both going concern projects. They're two different issues. And it may just have been one or two comments about accounting for green bonds as part of, you know, potentially as part of a climate risk project. And I think it was characterized as clarify. I think the board has discussed that recently, and we've provided a fair amount of clarity about how you would look at those. So I don't want to feed the notion that there's, you know, it's the Wild West with no fences at all around how you think about accounting for green bonds, because I think there are some very useful points made in the board's discussion of that paper. And then on discount rates, two things. One is there are some concerns raised about subjectivity, but I think subjectivity is inevitable in this area, you know, unless we're always saying it's the risk-free rate based on market observations, and we're not. And I think we can't write a standard that would be flexible, you know, appropriately flexible across jurisdictions and over time if we didn't have subjectivity. So I'm not big on the idea of we should be starting a project to eliminate subjectivity. I think we can think about whether or not we have an adequate framework for making the decisions, but that's different from eliminate the subjectivity. And given that we just did relatively recently the big research project on discount rates, I actually, well, my request for you in terms of next papers is to specifically bring in a recap of, you know, what work we did recently. I think so we can factor that into decision making. My personal take, remembering the you know, based on memory, which is a faulty tool, about our research project on discount rates, is that it would be we wouldn't be doing the things that people seem to have been asking us to do, standardize, you know, what our approach to discount rates is across all IFRS standards, because one of the things we bottomed out in that research project is that we have different objectives. Sometimes it's just the time value of money. Sometimes it's also reflecting risk and variability. And, you know, different times when it's based on management expectations versus, you know, market expectations. So I think that we would not be addressing the things that seem to be the core of the suggestions for us doing a project on discount rates. But bottom line is, can you make sure that you pick up a recap of recent work we've done, not just in that case, but across the other projects? So I think that's it in terms of first reactions on potential projects, and look forward to the next papers. Thanks.
And
one of the striking things for me coming out of this paper is that the projects listed for interaction with the ISSB in paper 24B are amongst the high priority projects for the IASB. So we've got intangible assets, going concern, climate-related risk, and pollutant pricing mechanisms, as mentioned in 24B. And then here we've got the high priority in climate-related risk, crypto, currency, intangible assets, and then next group, going concern. So it's also striking that these are the rankings in general, but they're also the rankings coming from users. It seems to have a sort of a bit of a flavour of the crowd pleasers. You know, the big ticket items are the things that are gathering a lot of attention. So that's going to be a job for us, determining between things that are just gathering attention and things that we actually want to work on. In terms of going concern, I think there's been a lot of discussion, but also I think a lot of it's pandemic related. And so we have to evaluate, you know, is this something we want to get involved in? There's some very clear arguments, not just that the board has put forward, but now that the stakeholders have put forward. There's some very clear arguments for us not getting involved in that area. So they're all things we're going to consider. So this very strong message that's come about coordinating with the work of the IASB raises some challenges, and they've already been alluded to today by Andreas and others. So I think we're going to have to consider work scheduling, considering areas that we can realistically work on independently, where we're not waiting in terms of IASSB, but there's going to be other things that you know, we're really going to have to consider how we're going to work in with them. My final comment, and this is something, when you come back to us, if you could give us some more information, I'd be interested to know the extent to which the stakeholders have cited some of our previous materials. So one thing we've been talking about is the study on discount rates, and in this paper there is a reference where a comment letter has referred to it, but I'd like to know if there are more references to the discount rate study and also more references to the materiality practice statement. So that if you could tell us, our stakeholders, referencing these things, because that's an indication to us that the work we've done previously is having an impact into the community. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Bruce? Thanks very much. So just a couple of general comments. I mean, the first one is, I think a couple of people made the comment around bucketing things together. I mean, there are obviously opportunities to, I don't want to say aggregate and disaggregate things, but effectively, yeah, kind of bring things together where we can. I think that'll be quite useful. I guess, thanks for the paper. I found it really interesting to read through and see where people were. But I guess where I was challenged a little bit with it was kind of saying, well, if I take those criteria or those considerations, as we know what to call them, and apply them to this, I find it a bit difficult to decide, well, would that project kind of fall into that or not? And if I just take one of the examples to me was things like the income taxes. So the income taxes, we had some put it high, some put it medium, some put it low. Okay, so that, where does that leave me? And then says, but almost all the users put this as high, medium. So what do you weight first? Because if we look at that comment around the users, well, that was one of our first criteria we'd look at. So does that override the others? And I guess to me it was just like, it's some of them are obvious. I mean, I think intangible assets, clearly a message, we need to look at that. But where we've got some of these other ones, I just found it was very difficult for me to sit and say, okay, based on the criteria we had, that's a project we need to take on because of the feedback we've got. So I guess as we start going into deciding which ones of these we're going to take on, I think maybe it's just a challenge in terms of trying to work out how do we rank them? You know, how do we actually put it in? Because building on the comment that was made earlier about, well, the sum could be two individuals and some could be, you know, four big accounting firms. Well, those to me would have a different view because one's got a much bigger global reach and the other one's somebody sitting in their study writing a comment letter. I guess just trying to decide how we're going to rank on those. I mean, there were no major surprises. I mean, I think a lot of them kind of came up where I was. I mean, just building, the one that I did touch on was, I think Mary touched on as well, was just building on this requirements for entities that are no longer going concern. I mean, that's quite a, I would consider that quite a decent project for us to decide if we're going to take on. I just think some of these things we'd need to decide long and hard, well, is that something we really want to do?
It's a decent code for chunky.
Yeah, it is. It is. I just think it's going to be, you know, I mean, it's almost another framework when you think about it. You know, do we really want to start taking on things like that? And I think it's just deciding on how we would look at the response in terms of how we would say to people why we would or wouldn't take those kind of projects on. But I think for me, the main thing was just the ranking, as I mentioned. Thanks.
Can I just make one comment in that regard and amend that? Because I think that there are other considerations that fall into a similar reign. There could be mentioning in certain geographies, for instance, but not in others, right? There could be mentioning in only certain industries, but not across the globe. So the question is, what is it if our stakeholdership is actually diverse, but there is a very strong voice from one particular part of the stakeholdership, a jurisdiction, an industry, a user group, for instance? Mm-hmm. Rika.
Thank you very much. I think high priority items are very clear, but at the same time, we need to assess the other items at the second layer to identify which we can work on if we still have a resource or time for working on. So I'm just wondering, like employee benefit, so I really want to understand what we have already learned from the previous project. Like we stopped the project of pension that depend on the asset returns. At that time, we understand that there was no real support to change the existing IS-19 framework drastically. People just want to focus on the fixed issue where they identify. But at the same time, if we target a very specific pension plan, that will not address the wider scope of the issue. So I think, so considering that, what else we can work on the standard setter to resolve the issue identified by stakeholders? So I really want to see what type of information we already have in connection with the issues requested by the stakeholders through agenda consultation.
Thank you, Rika.
I appreciate the comments made by some, notably by Bruce, on which project to take into consideration. Or Hans said that also. How can we white a particular population that commented in regards to another population? So I did something. I did an exercise very basic. I kind of look at the projects that were rated most in this paper 24D, and most in the paper 24G coming from users, because I still care about what users say and think, of course. And then it came to me that there are a list of projects that come quite consistently. So climate-related risk, and then there's a series of commodity transactions, cryptocurrencies and related transactions, pollutant pricing mechanisms. Some have said that it's the accounting for non-financial assets held for investment purpose. So they could be flagged into one single category. So somewhere in between an intangible item and something else. And then there was, of course, intangible assets. I will come back to this one later on. And there was also statement of cash flows and related matters with which I would be fine as far as nobody forces preparers to present a statement of cash flow using the direct method. But apart from that, I would be very happy that we go for such a project. So you have five projects that come quite similarly. And in addition, that's the first comment I would, and I didn't white it among the various types of populations, and so there it's absolutely not qualitative as an assessment, of course. And then for climate-related risk, I would say it's heavily linked to the ISSB. Should we proceed with a project without first engaging with the ISSB on such an issue? Commodity transactions, cryptocurrencies, pollutant mechanism, can we really address this project prior to engaging a more thorough analysis on intangible items? I come to intangible assets. I think the project is almost, there are three phases in the project. There is probably a first phase, which is a recognition and measurement project, because there are gaps currently in IS38. The first gap, and I think the gaps, they come notably from the title of the standard that is not reflective of its content. It shouldn't be worded intangible asset. It should be worded intangible items or intangible elements. And then paragraph 13 is not very precise. What is an underlying resource? Some have said it's within the boundaries of a contract and have accounted many intangible items as intangible assets in these reasons, whereby some others have had a very restrictive appreciation of what an underlying resource is, notably in intellectual property industries, whether you really control the intellectual property itself or not was the key determinative factor in accounting for an intangible asset. So there you have things for a right of use that are not comparable. Then right of access, it has been flagged by the Interpretations Committee when we discussed notably at the time the SAS arrangement issues. There is nothing in the literature in IS38 currently dealing with right to access. Contrary to the, for me, what is the symmetric standard, which is IFRS 15, where the sale of the right of use IP, the sale of the right to access an IP are perfectly clear in this standard, but it's not the case in IS38. Then you have other issues I won't develop on the measurements and the inconsistencies of measuring depending whether you acquire through a business combination or you internally generate or you acquire as a single asset, because we have never mentioned that, but there are many inconsistencies between the requirements to measure an intangible item that could become an intangible asset and in many cases is not when you acquire it, not you internally develop it, you acquire it as a single item versus the same item would be acquired within a business combination. So those are examples, and we may quote others. It is first an accounting project on recognition and measurement. Then, of course, I mean, personally, I would rather go for less intangible assets recognized and more OPEX recognized. Then it means that, of course, you need to disclose. When you have an executory contract and have balance sheet commitments, you need to disclose those. So there's, of course, a second step or second leg in the project, which is disclosures. And then, of course, there is probably the third leg, which is intangible items, more globally in relationship to the ISSB, so kind of human capital or whatever. So I wouldn't go for recognizing those in the balance sheet, but then something maybe needs to be assessed in relation to the ISSB and probably within the boundaries of the management commentary project also. So we can also typically phase a project on intangible items that way, for instance. But Of course, then probably commodity, cryptocurrencies, pollutant pricing mechanism needs to be assessed after that. So there will be also, even though if we decide to go for a project or another, there may be, and that's my comment there as a concluding remark, is the phasing of the project, one that we might decide to take on board, at the board. and the phasing one to another.
Thank you, Bertrand.
Bertrand's comments were actually a very useful segue into what I was going to say. I was just going to make a few observations or thoughts for the staff to think about in terms of how we think about some of these projects where people have said, and of course this is relevant to the ISSB, because I think Well, two things come to mind. Firstly, I think we need to remember that just because we're having a sister board established, it doesn't change our day job. And our day job is still to make sure the financial statements are a really good set of information and we've got the right things recognised and we've got the right notes to the financial statements that sort of relate to that information. And the fact that the ISSB is going to be established doesn't change that. So let me use an example. So for climate, there may well be things we should think about doing to, follow up on some of the work that Nick's done in our educational materials that maybe would reinforce some of the things you already need to think about in financial statements and in the notes of the financial statements that isn't really on the ISSB's turf at all. And there's no real reason, I think, why we couldn't do that. And then later on, of course, we might want to double-check that everything still fits in properly. But, it seems to me that in the first instance, we shouldn't say, oh, we can't touch climate anymore because there's going to be an ISSB. Particularly because I think we need to be realistic that their work's probably going to be occupied for a reasonable amount of time when they first set up, just getting these prototype documents and things done. And so some of the things we might want to work on with them, say intangibles, for example, I agree with Bertrand, we should think about the critical path because there may well be many aspects that we could start thinking about and we could bring them in at the end. And I think Bertrand put it very nicely, there's recognition and measurement questions, there's questions for the notes to the financial statements that are our legitimate territory, if you like. And then there's another piece, which is the broader aspects where the ISSB becomes incredibly relevant. And so let's think creatively about how much we maybe should do ourselves, if you like, in the financial statement sphere with a view to ultimately tying in with the ISSB at the right time, because that might just be the better path at the moment. Now, I hope one day when both boards are up and running and a bit more mature that we're going to sit down and start projects together at the table, talking about them and then parceling up our work. But we probably need to be a little bit pragmatic in the nearer term in terms of actually not holding ourselves up, waiting for things that we don't need to wait for. Because it's not as though we can't suddenly do things because our job hasn't really changed.
Great, thank you.
So I'll start by saying I agree. I did the same analysis Bertrand did. You sit down and you look and you say, wow, there's six large projects and then there are other projects that are certainly worth doing. And so it's a prioritization exercise. And the temptation is to put things together so that they're handled as one project. Except I don't think it works that way. I think I'm new to the standard setting game, but if there's a certain amount of work involved in a project, what's useful for me to know is what you've estimated, which is the size of the project, but also whether there are diseconomies of scale or economies of scale in combining them. So if we put these two together, are we going to make life harder for ourselves, or are we going to make it easier? And as we create those decision trees going forward, that would be really useful information, in particular for me. I'm sure there are some people here who know that exactly, and they're going to be able to do that analysis, but I'm going to need help. I know sort of this concept that we've got fixed costs to a project and the outreach and who we're reaching out to, but understanding where we overwhelm the fixed costs with just too much content and content that could look a little bit different. So that would be useful for me. I won't speak. You did a great job describing all the individual projects, and I have my view. But for now, it's sort of that decision tree and knowing where aggregation or putting things together will be helpful and where it won't.
Just to follow up on that, Zach, one thing that I've found throughout sort of my time here is that the more focus we can make a project scope, the more likely the project is to succeed. And I think part of the success of the Primary Financial Statements project has been that we started off with a very focused scope. When we started out, people wanted us to throw in statement of cash flows, IFRS 5 into the scope of it, and I don't think we'd have made the progress that we have made on PFS if we'd had such a large scope.
Thank you, Andreas. I just echo what Zach said, that actually it's really about priority decision. How can we make this decision based on all the feedback we gathered? Because stakeholders told us three projects are high priority, and they are, most of the stakeholders agree that three projects, and I think many stakeholders another three project. So I think one of the elements, and which you also mentioned, I'm also thinking about that. What kind of elements can help us to make a decision? I think one of the elements is that whether the scope of the project can be easily identified and can easily be managed. We can see some of the projects, it's very difficult to identify the scope, or even easy, but this project is closely linked to other projects. So I think, for example, if I look at the climate-related risk, and based on the feedback, those respond to say, okay, it should be a high priority. But based on paragraph 14, A, B, C, D, E, F, I think it's very difficult to identify the scope. Because different people are looking at different aspects of climate-related risk. Some focus on disclosure, some focus on recognition and measurement impact, some focus on how this project will be connected with the work on IWSB. So from my perspective, I don't know what's the scope we are going to do. I think so this is, and some stakeholders seems be happy with our education material, and Nick and I think the board has issued, would they demand just additional guidance, not necessarily a standard. A second project, cryptocurrency. A lot of stakeholders say it should be a high priority, but what's the scope we are going to focus? Because different forms of cryptocurrency may have different impact or implication on our accounting treatment. For example, some cryptocurrencies actually arising from initial coin offering, which are regulated by stock exchanges. Some forms of cryptocurrencies actually are so-called digital currency issued by central bank, just like cash. Some cryptocurrency actually are those decentralized currency. It's not regulated by bank or central bank or something like that. So different people actually are talking about different things. And those different things actually have different nature. So from our standard setting perspective, we need to look at those issues with very clear scope, clear, very clear understanding of those natures of transactions, something like that. So this is the impression I got from even cryptocurrency. I got from paragraph 25. We got a lot of feedback, suggestions, but actually people are talking about different kind of things. So if we are going to move forward on such as cryptocurrencies, climate-related risks, I think the first thing we need to look at what the scope we are going to do, we are going to focus on. And for example, even cryptocurrencies, some people actually, in paragraph 27, some people say it's widespread. We need to focus on, we need to look at this issue. But in paragraph 27, some stakeholders say, okay, it's not an urgent matter. Those transactions were not yet widespread. So I think we also need some kind of evidence, not only scope, also need some evidence whether those issues are really widespread, you know, impact a large number of entities, or whether it still impacts a small number of companies, or small number of companies in some jurisdictions. Because as I know, some countries actually are banning, you know, for companies to involve in these kind of transactions. So I think all those things we need to consider together and then to decide whether those projects should be added on our work plan. Otherwise, if we add some projects on our work plan, but in the end, we still realize that it's very difficult to identify or manage the scope, and it will waste a lot of resources for us to do to conduct those projects. So this is just my observation based on the feedback we received so far. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinjiao. Nick.
Thank you. So I'm going to be building on Jen Chow's comments, actually, that I know we say this isn't a beauty contest, it's not a voting exercise, but seemingly we're in a place where we have a reasonable convergence of interest from across our stakeholder groups, which could be a good place to be. But that's subject to understanding, I guess, the detail of their responses. And if I stick with climate-related risk as an example, there I think we did have a very precise scope of what a project could be. We talked about a couple of paragraphs in our requirements, I think one in IS1 and one in IS36 in terms of changes we could make, which actually don't just apply to climate-related risk, but would apply to climate-related risk. And I think what I want to perhaps then understand as the next stage from the feedback is that kind of yes to climate-related risk of the project, is it yes to that precise scope that we put out there, or is it actually more of a yes general, we think this is a good thing that we should be exploring? Because that then puts in a very different place, I think, in terms of the knowing, you know, the trade-offs in taking on a project like that. You know, given that if we've got clear scope, if most people say yes to that tight scope, we could proceed in that in a reasonably sensible, you know, driven, understandable fashion. But if it's much vaguer than that, you know, that then makes life more difficult for us. And I suspect it doesn't only apply to climate related risks, it may apply more generally, but I guess that's a kind of vision I'm hoping to get from perhaps the next stage of feedback.
And if I may build on your comments, Dan, also to build expectations, I think the fact that we don't have a standard on cryptocurrencies doesn't convince me that we particularly need one. The fact that we don't have a standard on climate issues, climate risk, doesn't mean that we necessarily need one. I shall remind everyone, we have 3,800 pages of literature, and we call ourselves principles-based. I'm happy to be more precise, to perhaps amend, to review wherever our literature is deficient in terms of, is it having any gaps, or is it producing outcomes that are counterintuitive? These, to me, seem logical bits to actually look at. But merely because something is now hip and trendy and we don't have a standard isn't convincing enough for me to actually take it on. And I think that the comments that I've heard go exactly into that same direction, put just in a little different way. So when it comes to cryptocurrencies, my first questions would be, how many IFRS reporting entities do you know that have material holdings of cryptos? The number, I would suspect, is actually rather low. Yes, there is a lot of crypto trading and there is a lot of crypto handling or whatever, but probably not amongst IFRS reporting entities. And if so, if they venture into trading, probably we do have a standard that takes care of that already. So I think I would be very much inclined to, as Nick said, as Jinjiao said, get a better understanding of what is it that people really mean if they say, look into crypto. Is it doing a homework exercise where we actually categorize the different types of cryptos and see where we do have gaps or where our current literature doesn't provide a suitable answer? Be my guest. I think that's really useful to do. But I wouldn't be prepared to just say because we don't have a standard, we should actually develop one. Because if we go down that path, I think that will just end into an endless train of standard development. Similarly, with crypto, with climate-related issues, you made the point, and I made them in one meeting that we recently had with the firms. I mean, this time it is climate-related risks. Tomorrow it's biodiversity risk. The next one is water risk. Then it is migration risk. Yeah, but there's nothing in your standard. Yeah, could you not just provide a bit more? I think we really have to be faithful to ourselves and ask ourselves, are we really interested in principle-based standard setting? And only provide something where it is really needed, where there is a deficiency, where there is a gap, and nobody can come to the right answer. I think education guidance is probably a good tool to make people aware of what's already in the standard. And if we come to a standard that's being amended anyway, and IS1 is a logical candidate, if we can provide help as a quick and easy fix, okay, let's do it. But don't ask us to amend the standard year after year after year because something fancy has come up. I think we really need to apply judgment here as well. Lastly, for intangibles, I mean, I've made this comment over and over again. I think intangibles warrants a consideration by us and probably in stages, as you, Bertrand, have said. I mean, our standard is quite old-fashioned. It was written with a particular mindset in place. Question that I would have is that still up to date, or has the environment changed? Therefore, is the standard not producing answer that people are looking towards? There is certainly room for further disclosures. I shouldn't say disclosures because that's almost perceived as a threat, but there's room for more transparency about the key value drivers of entities that operate in the service area. If you think about really from the entire logic around the ISSB, show me the value creation potential. For industries that are manufacturing based, you probably see the value creation or a large degree of that on the balance sheet, and you see the increase and the depletion of that. For service-oriented entity, you don't see that, and you don't have anything in our report that really talks to that. So intangibles for me could mean bringing more transparency as to what are the key value drivers. And then there is a knock-on question. Is that for us? Is that for the ISSB? Or is it potentially for both of us to a certain degree? And that is something that obviously we then need to discuss. So a staged approach very much resonates with me.
Thanks, Andreas. Just at risk of reopening all these discussions again, just a couple of comments on that. I mean, I agree with you. We do need to look at where the standard doesn't work. And just by the way, I mean, I was the lone dissenting view on the IFRIC cryptocurrency agenda decision because I think it got us completely the wrong place. But anyhow, that was besides the point. My concern comes back to a comment earlier where somebody mentioned that wonderful word relevance. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, and I think we've got to be careful about finding that expectation gap. My only concern with that is we also, I think, need to be mindful of what's happening in the world. So if I look at something like cryptos, I think you're right. Crypto at the moment is not. It's probably not held by a lot of IFRS reporters, but I guess if you go look 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 1 year ago, now, it's something that's increasing and becoming a lot more relevant as time goes on. We know that standard setting is not a quick thing, and as much as I appreciate it, I know some of the papers people spoke about quick wins, and I love the idea of what they would define as a quick win, but I mean there's no quick way to resolve these things, so they could take us 2-3 years to get an effective standard out on that. And I just think that there is a risk, and I agree there is a risk that we do something that doesn't end up, we do cryptos, it just doesn't end up being a big thing in 3 years, it just collapses and disappears. But at the same time, we have to weigh up, well, what happens in 3 years time? This is now being used by 20 countries as currency. It's being used in commerce, and where the guys have missed the boat in terms of now starting a project and so on. So I agree with what you're saying, but I think we need to balance it along there are emerging issues. I mean, digital is another thing. We hear a lot about what's happening in the digital space. It hasn't happened yet, but a lot's heading towards what's going to happen. We can't afford to ignore those. So I think there is a fine balance between some of them will just be slightly riskier projects, but I think we have to look at trends and decide, look, these are things we're still going to invest the time. So it's a fine balance.
And I certainly agree with that. You will remember one of my key themes is scanning the horizon. So scanning for megatrends, things that could become important, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, you could err on the wrong side. I mean, that's but for not erring on the wrong side, if something then becomes burningly urgent, will take time, and probably time that nobody has, right?
Yeah, it's a risk, yeah.
All right. Sue?
A comment on Bruce's performance at the interpretation.
Especially that one agenda decision. Yeah.
I agree with everything you said, Andreas. I was just going to add something with a sort of different aspect of relevance, because one of the things that really strikes me more and more when we're talking to stakeholders, and you can see it in the feedback in this document, but you can also see it in the PIR analysis for 10, 11 and 12, is that we pick the book up and we can see that there's stuff in here that should result in particular outcomes, but for some reason when other people pick up the book, it's not having that effect. And we saw with Going Concern, where we put out our really good educational material reminding people of the relevant disclosure requirements, etc., and, you know, tried to put the pieces together, that there's a lot there that people should be able to use to get to good disclosure. But we still had a number of national standard setters who felt they needed to go an extra step and write specific paragraphs to deal with Going Concern. So I totally agree with you that we need to really have a high bar, if you like, for standard setting, that so we don't undermine the principles. But I think one thing that we need to do at some point in time, and maybe it's once we work out what we're going to work on and what we're not going to work on, is maybe as a separate initiative, it's like, okay, but there's all these expectations gaps between what we think should be happening and where people are stuck. What as an organisation can or should we be doing to help bring people on this journey with us to get the outcomes that we're anticipating? You know, because I feel like we're missing something, and there's a disconnect, and I think we sort of need to really drill down into why we're not getting the outcomes that sometimes we're expecting. What's missing? Yeah, I agree, not standard setting, but there's something sometimes.
And it seems that education guidance alone isn't doing the trick.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to. Yeah.
Okay, some food for thought, I suppose. Shall we continue with the next paper?
Yep, moving on to agenda paper 24E. This paper looks at the feedback that we received on the projects that were listed in Appendix C to the request for information. Those were projects suggested by only a few of our stakeholders during the outreach that we conducted prior to issuing the request for information. This paper also lists out a wide range of other projects that respondents suggested in response to questioning the RFI for any projects that weren't named in the request for information as to whether they thought they were a high priority. In all cases, these projects were suggested by one or only a few respondents. So with that, I'll hand you to the board to discuss.
This is a kind of situation where you may have someone having a problem in their jurisdiction, and it's an important problem for them, and it gets sometimes lost in the middle of so many other requirements from other jurisdictions as well. And I really like the idea that someone mentioned for a paper before, and it is no papers actually, the incentivizing us for this partnering with other national standard setters in relation to, for example, one specific subject being well studied. I mean, that it's like a parallel project being run by a national standard setter. And then eventually it may come to the board with almost a prototype of a project that can help the board to quickly move towards a solution that might help a specific jurisdiction or industry. I think that when we look at these ones, I mean, that we shouldn't take, for example, one of the first sentences here, that in all cases, those potential projects were suggested by one or a few respondents, but we still may take some advantage of if someone wants to carry out a project on this one, using, for example, the National Standard Center to put something ready for our discussion in a more advanced stage, it would be something good as well. I mean, that it is difficult maybe to add to our working plan, but might be a way forward if we can just having this help from some national standard set to develop some solutions for some of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Bruce?
Thanks. Just some quick comments. I mean, I'm building on what Tadeo said. I mean, I think a lot of these are people's wish lists in terms of what they wanted. And unfortunately, I think this is going to be one of those cases where the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. We can't take on things one or two people have said. Also, I just think some of these were interesting. I mean, I don't really think people have given us much. I mean, if you look at some of these, like review IFRS 16, consider alignment with US GAAP. I mean, that's not a small thing to do. That's basically saying, do we want to replace IFRS 16 with everything different? Although my favorite slide would be, review the disclosure requirements in IAS 24. Well, other than disclosure requirements, what's left in IAS 24? You know, these are not small projects that people are taking on. So, I mean, my view on these would be, and I do appreciate there are some very valid points, but I think a lot of them could be individual problems where people are having. If they're individual problems, I always say we've got the interpretations committee. People can drive them through there. If there's an issue, that we can try and do some of that. And Sue's mentioning earlier more about trying to fill that gap. I actually think the agenda decisions do that really well. We maybe need to just start encouraging people more to use that mechanism. I like the idea of now passing work back to the interpretations committee. I was on the interpretations committee, I used to pass work to the board, so I'm doing quite well. But I think the idea is to try and, you know, I think use those kind of mechanisms where we can trumpet this. But I do think that unless there's a burning, huge noise coming out of these, I mean, we have limited capacity, and I just think it'll be difficult to take a lot of these on.
Bruce, Mary.
When I looked at this paper, and I think about the list of items in there, it leads me to say first, congratulations to the project team, especially on the effectiveness of the phase one research they did to identify what the likely subjects were that most people wanted to comment on, and to provide a description that would get most of the feedback concentrated in this area. So the first takeaway I have from this list is that it says to me we had a good project design and we can, you know, use the feedback that we got on the list of projects. A couple of other things in terms of how we feedback, you know, because the people, we said from the beginning there's always going to be space to raise other subjects, and this is where they raised other subjects. And so to make sure that people know that we saw them, we thought about them, I think we do need some kind of very, you know, brief comment, and it isn't just that only a few people raised it about why we're not doing this. I think for many of these projects, we could comment where we see it overlapping with work we either are doing or have planned. For example, some of the disclosures about NCI and debt overlap with things we're considering in FICE. So, you know, the point about IFRS 15 could be fed into the PIR. I think Bruce's point about, you know, I also want to pick up on one of Bruce's points, which is, there don't seem to me to be a lot that we're saying there's a conflict in IFRS standards. You know, we don't know whether to look at this or look at that. It's mostly about where I'd like a bit more guidance, or, you know, where I'd like to look at it a different way. And I think Bruce's point about if people see conflicts, they can send that to the interpretations committee. You know, that's kind of the best channel, especially for things that are narrow. I guess I'm not so keen on the idea of if this is something that affects only a small population, maybe rely on somebody else to develop a prototype and then we can consider it, because I think that runs counter to what Andreas was just saying about principles-based standards and not having to have explicit guidance on every issue. I think we have to be really careful about only, I'm going to show that I'm paper-based, picking up the pen, when we think that there's a real gap, as opposed to just because it, you know, IAS 37 on provisions may not say, and this applies to climate-related risks also, but if you have a cleanup obligation that results from climate legislation, you're in IAS 37. So I'm not keen on doing that, because I could see it just coming with an endless submission of, can you just incorporate this into your literature so that we have something specific to point to technology? See, that's the downside of technology. So I think we should be cautious about responding to those. But I can see doing a table or something that just says, here are the issues and here's where we think they may be covered by other work.
Thank you, Sick. Perfect follow-on for Mary. I think along those lines, we did a great job with the extractive activities of passing on information to the agenda consultation team. And I think that's the vein I would take a lot of these suggestions is, here's the team that's going to take a look at IFRS 16 when we form it, and here's this piece of feedback that you can use as a starting point. The only one that I would call out in particular is actually the guidance on the reporting and disclosure of the factoring of receivables. I viewed that as part of the cash flows project. I don't know if everyone's aware, but there are, in some jurisdictions, one jurisdiction that I know fairly well, there is a requirement already around this, and it's widely used for adjusting cash flows. And so it fits perfectly within a lot of what we're thinking about in terms of the cash flow project. So if we decide to go forward with that, I would actually recommend that that be included as a piece of that.
Joe?
I think Mary mentioned that because we got so many feedback from stakeholders and how can we give feedback to those stakeholders. And some stakeholders may just mention one standard. For them, maybe it's very important for them. But for us, maybe not will not be added to our agenda. So how can we explain it to them? I think it's key. For example, I just mentioned one project. Some stakeholders mentioned, for example, I think maybe several standards said to mention about develop guidance on applying IFRS standards for not-for-profit entities. I think I understand because in some jurisdictions, maybe there is a lack of accounting standard setting body, or maybe the standards is just lack of capacity to develop accounting standards for not-for-profit organizations. So that means those companies, those entities, just simply permitted or required to apply IFRS standards or IFRS or SME standards. But from our perspective, our IFRS standards or IFRS for SME standards are designed for those profit-oriented entities to meet the information needs of those users, particularly those investors. And those not-for-profit organizations, the users are different, information needs are different. So I understand there are some problems why they need guidance to help them to how to account for those transactions, how to meet information needs for those users. But I think this kind of project, whether we need to add to our work plan or not, it's not about agenda consultation decision. It's about our strategic decision of our function, or the function of ISB. And those decisions should be decided by the trustee rather than by the board, in my understanding. So this kind of message we should convey to the stakeholders. And also we should make those stakeholders aware there is another project, International Financial Reporting for Not-for-Profit Organization project ongoing. I think our SME project, we are going to discuss again about the scope. So maybe if they need guidance, those stakeholders can look at that project, where that project may provide some detailed guidance for them. So just, I think just how can we respond to those feedback we received from stakeholders? It will be helpful for them, yeah.
Thank
you. I completely agree with what Andreas mentioned about we shouldn't undervalue the benefit of principle-based standards, especially because as an auditor, I had experience to support the company that had ICO and crypto asset-related transactions. Those transactions are very complicated, but still, we could figure out how to account for in accordance with IFRS, because IFRS is principle-based standards. So considering that, I really think if we further consider about climate-related risk, and then if we consider how we can expand or enhance the disclosure in connection with climate-related risk, or in that case, we also can we should consider the broader spectrum of other risks, which is mentioned in this paper. We should consider the broader spectrum of ESG. So, we need to sell our stakeholder to understand our standards is principle-based, but at the same time, we should keep that in mind.
Here. Okay, Rachel.
Thank you. Moving on to the final paper for today, this is Agenda Paper 24F. This paper summarises feedback on potential projects from sources other than the survey, comment letters and outreach. In particular, it identifies some potential projects that were identified in feedback to the IFRS Interpretations Committee, issues identified as part of the Extractive Activities Project, and some issues identified in feedback on the post-implementation review of IFRS 10, 11 and 12. So I'll hand over to the board to discuss.
Nobody with a keen interest to take on football player transfer payments.
Here we go. Committee member.
Okay, make
time.
It rugby.
No, but I was an interpersons committee member when we issued both agenda decisions. I think it would be valuable to tackle those two questions if we were to decide to take a project on intangible items, once again, not assets. Typically on SAS, the Interpretations Committee went on the route to say there's no asset to account for, neither in accordance with IS 38, neither in accordance with IFRS 16, for instance, unless there is an advance payment received, which is something else. On the football player transfer payments, typically the question asked leads me to make the comment that intangible items are not PP&Es. This is a PP&E, and intangible items are something else. So I'm not sure we need necessarily to align a prescription relating to intangible item to something that is not intangible. But that's a personal comment and a personal view.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing some of the issues that we have discussed in other projects, and then happy to see that they are here and being considered. But one point that we have already discussed for the other projects is, and I agree with that, if we can focus on, define the scope, we can move easier than actually going no direction. But I still believe that I'm looking at paragraph 8 for some of the issues that come up from the post-implementation review of IFRS 10, 11, 12. The first time that we discussed that, and I just look at that meeting, I look at the investment entities, subsidiaries that are investment entities, and the definition of investment entities. For these topics, despite one is considered as a high priority, another one as a medium priority, this is a type of situation that I'm not saying that we should do that, but definitely we have to stop and think whether maybe we can put the two together and still get something quickly adjusted. That if we realize that it definitely sounds like two different projects, fine. But if we can put them together, and again, it will not be one, but it will also not be two projects, but something like 1.3 or 1.2. and still worth moving in this direction. Thank you.
Thanks to Dave. Anne?
I think we've got some strategic decisions to make in relation to things like this that have referred out of something else, because there's been feedback. Let's talk about the post-implementation review of 10, 11 and 12. And people have provided an enormous amount of feedback. There's been a lot of work, a lot of consultation. But I don't think we just take this and rank it against the other feedback and the other projects, because it's a post-implementation review. So strategically, we have to think about it, that it is a post-implementation review, because there are many stakeholders who have got a lot of interest and effort riding on post-implementation reviews, that something comes out of them. So I don't think that we just look at this and we say, oh, okay, da-da-da, but, you know, that. So therefore, these other things we've heard about in gender consultation, they rank higher, they're more important. The fact that this has come out of a post-implementation review means it's important. You could possibly say the same thing about the extractive activities, that what eventually got referred was a distillation of an enormous amount of work. So already there'd been a lot of thought about the scope of that project, and it eventually got narrowed down to this. So for this particular paper, for these issues, I just think they have to be thought about strategically. It's not just a straight comparison of, oh, you know, how important do we think investment in entities is vis-a-vis pollutant pricing mechanisms. Thank you.
Task. All right. I don't see any. Ah, sorry, Mary.
No, because my thinking on this issue of things that come from other sources has been quite different to Anne's, which is, yes, there is a huge investment by everybody, by us, but by our stakeholders, feeding back on, you know, I'll use 10, 11, 12 as the example. And at the end of the day, this is the distillation, and I'd flag that the priority indications are in the context of that PIR. These are the things that were higher or medium, and what was low priority. But to me, that doesn't mean that because they came out of a PIR, we automatically action them. I think that is input we should consider, and I think, you know, I'd agree with Anne's point that because this isn't vote counting, there is something specific that says this is the feedback we have about places where our suite of standards isn't maybe working as effectively as we'd hoped. But it doesn't, to me, make it automatic that we therefore undertake standard setting to address that. I think we give it, you know, that maybe more 3D input, but it still has to then go head to head with the other things that are competing for time, because again, it's not just our time and our capacity to deal with it, but it's our stakeholders' capacity to deal with it. And, you know, across the population, that, you know, the answer may be it's more important that we do pollutant pricing than it is that, you know, it may be the other way around too. But I just wouldn't. I think I'd come at it differently. So I just wanted to flag that.
Yeah, I think it's the whole idea that we could do all this information in a PIR and do nothing. I think we just have to be aware what the message that sends, because this is a big PIR. 10, 11, and 12. People are already talking about 9, 15, and 16. There has to be expectations that something happens.
But
that's
why?
All I'm saying is that we have to think about it.
I don't know whether it has to be an expectation that something happens in response to the findings, if the findings are that the stress points are relatively isolated and focused on particular issues. You know, maybe it's part of the feedback on the PIR, but to me, I don't feel like we automatically have to act. And that's one of the things that I think it's the due process handbook says, you know, what action, if any, the board is going to take.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think that given the size of these projects, I would agree with Anne that I would have the expectation that there are probably issues that the standard could need a refinement. And the question is, for 10, 11, 12, we are already aware of these issues, which is good because we are now building our plan towards 2022 to 2026. what would happen with 9, 15, and 16, that comes after we have finalized our work plan. So that seems to suggest that probably we shouldn't be planning to full capacity, but really leave some wriggle room. Should we be needing to act quickly? And if I just pick one of the issues that has been flagged also in your papers, the issues around green bonds and things like that, if the message to your point, Anne, was, sorry, have decided on our work plan, need to come back in 2026, that's probably not sending the right signal. And this is not to say that you inferred it, but I think we have to be mindful. Neely.
I was actually just going to say something that you touched on towards the end there that might sort of reconcile all the different views. The first is that we have left a little bit of capacity in the numbers that we've provided in the request for information, so that if there is an urgent project coming out of 10, 11, and 12, which I think from the feedback for last month and this month is not the case, but 9, 15, or 16, we do have the capacity to start that, and we don't have to leave space for it as part of this discussion in the next couple months. The other thing is that even if today or over the next couple months we decide not to do one of these 10, 11, and 12 projects, it doesn't necessarily mean that nothing is coming out of it, because it could still be just that it didn't become a priority for this round. However, when we have more capacity in theory in 2026, it could still be a priority at that point. So it doesn't mean that it's just done. It's just not this time.
I just wanted to, I think, support what Anne was saying in that, you know, the post-implementation review fills a significant part of our due process handbook. So the board is required to. So, I mean, when people figured out our processes, they thought this was an important part of what we do. And I think that goes a little bit to what I'm filling in here. What Anne was saying is, you know, we've been doing this. We've got a whole pile of information, a whole pile of work's been done. We're much farther ahead on it than other things. And so I think based on how important it is in our due process handbook and the amount of work's gone in, we've identified the priorities, to then say we'll just put it on hold to start investigating other stuff, I think there should be kind of a high hurdle to displace a post-implementation review that's sort of well along. And I just, it seems to me it should start with sort of a head start in our race for choice. I don't say that we shouldn't bump it, but I think, the general view is that we take these things seriously and act on them.
Sure. I think for me the key thing is having a deliberate sort of strategy, you know, knowing what the parameters are, because there's different views, valid views in each direction, but we don't have a stated case, and then being really clear to communicate to people what to expect. So you're going to put all this effort into a post-implementation review, but then at the end, ultimately, we're actually going to rank it with, you know, lots of other things to decide whether or not we should do it. I think the worst thing that happens is, you know, like when we worked on the segments and we actually put out an ED and then we ended up doing nothing, and so we cranked the whole system up, and then we ended up not making the changes. That was tough as well. So good one to think about.
No, we're all very enthusiastic. Yeah. Thank you very much for the feedback.
Here we go. Excellent. Exactly. So let me finish the decision to add my thanks to all of you for the really good work that you've done. You've given us a lot to think about. We have rewarded you by throwing the same thing back to you and saying, could we please have some more? Thank you very much. Looking forward to the next suite of papers. Excellent. And with that, I close today's meeting. Thank you.